south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. First thing I want to talk about, a nice slew of emails I've been getting, saying that sometimes my shows are a bit garbled or slightly unintelligible, and words and phrases drop out. In fact, more than one listener claimed I might be a target of an NSA plot, while others thought I was on some designer drugs or just a lot of tequila when I did those shows. That said, let me read you this one. It starts out, "Greetings, Johnny. I'm writing because I very much wanted to hear all of your show for July 25th, but there was so many cutouts, noises, and over-talking that I couldn't hear the whole middle portion. Is this a problem on my end? If it's just my problem, is there a way to send me a link of the show outside the Podbean format? But perhaps this was purposeful interference. There are quite a few shows we listen to who have interruptive noises, dead air, and sometimes they're knocked completely off the air for a period of time. Most likely attributed to content that's too revealing. Now, you know, I was so excited to hear about the coffee plantation mulch and biodiesel, etc., on that July 25th program, but was so frustrated also because I just couldn't hear all that you were saying. Just thought I'd give you a heads up, Johnny. As always, we're waiting for your next show. Signed, the Tennessee Wannabes." Again, I've been getting a lot of emails like that lately. And no, I don't think they want to be in Tennessee. I think they want to be somewhere else. Like down here in Latin America, of course. Anyway, just to set the record straight, and dissuade anyone out there who thinks it's a conspiracy. And by the way, sometimes I wish it was so I could beat up on the government even more. In fact, I know they're listening. I won't tell you how I know, but I know they are. Though I don't think they're sabotaging me covertly anyway as of yet. But I could be wrong. Anyway, when I do these expat file shows, I send them up to New York twice a week by way of a service that lets you send very large files. Now, unfortunately, because often I'm sending these things from out in the coffee fields, the internet connection will drop out. And if that happens in the middle of sending a large file, I get a little pop-up window that says, "Your upload's been paused until a reconnection with the internet is established." And that happens automatically, sometimes at 2 or 3 in the morning. So, all this while I've been thinking that the system is automatic and everything would be just fine, even with an internet cutout. But now I know there are some flaws in that system. Anyway, in checking it out, I've come to the conclusion that 80% or more of the time when there's a cutout or a screw-up like that, it's that large file upload service that mangled things. But as not to totally disappoint all you listeners out there who were thinking it was designer drugs and excess tequila, there's always a chance that expat Eddie can fill in for a show or two. Now, that would be interesting. So it's like this. Once the file is sent, I and everyone else assumes it made its way through the ether just fine and ended up in New York 100% intact. Obviously, that hasn't always been the case. Now, as a lot of you listeners out there probably already figured out, I don't listen to my shows after they're so-called in the can. That's why, for example, when somebody sends me an email and says, "Could you expound a little more about the air quality thing you mentioned on the February 26th show?" You know what? Sometimes emails like that just stump me. Now, I can remember pretty much what I've talked about in the last couple weeks of shows, but when you ask me to go back farther than that, that's when my eyes glaze over. I can't even remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. Because, you know, like one famous philosopher said, if you're worried all the time, you're living in the past. If you're stressed and uptight, you're thinking about the future. And if you're calm and steady and happy, you're living in the present. Which is why I think, in general, Latin people are so very happy. And thankfully, after expats are down here long enough, some of that living for the moment thing inevitably rubs off. Which, believe me, for gringos is a very good thing. Now, as far as that July 25th show, I got so many emails on that show, I ended up resending it. So if you go back and re-download it from PRN or Podbean, you'll get the correct, complete version. I hope. So what's that mean? Well, since I don't know if they're all getting there in one piece, I'm asking all you early downloaders out there, I mean the ones that get on it right when it comes out, just send me an email if you hear it coming out choppy or twisted or whatever, and I'll send out another version right away and it'll get updated. And luckily, so far, I think there have only been 3 or 4 out of a total of 380 shows I've done so far that listeners have reported any problems with. But one thing I have noticed, since it is the rainy season down here in Latin America, that's when, during heavy storms, you do get occasional internet dropouts. But that, of course, is only when you're using a wireless internet like I am, being that I'm often sending this stuff out when I'm in the boonies way out in the coffee fields with no cable hookup. Only one of those little wireless USB modem jobs. Anyway, I've noticed even if you have wireless, you almost never get a dropout at all during the dry season. And that's 6 months of the year from November through April. So anyway, I'm asking you early birds who listen to the show first, if you have any problems, send me an email and let me know. I'll fix it. I promise. Now, on the last show, I touched on a few things about the love and romance department concerning mostly gringas, first world ladies that come down here, and I issued a few tips and warnings. And believe me, every time I talk about this kind of stuff, you know, the romance and the love and the dating angle, I get a lot of emails from people asking for more details, and I get emails saying that I should just shut up and stick to the other stuff. Now, my answer to that is that more than half of the long-term expats down here, whether gringo or gringa, do end up in relationships with the locals. Now, that can be a very complicated situation, or not, depending on how much information you have before you take the plunge. So, I think you really deserve some kind of heads up on this stuff, so you don't fall into a lot of the holes and the traps that other gringos and gringas have stumbled into. Now, I'm not trying to tell you what you should do with your love life, that's your business, but I've certainly been down here long enough to see how first world slash third world love matches can go sour quickly and even crash and burn, especially when often there's a huge socioeconomic gap between the said couple. Specifically, when the gringa or first world lady that's down here comes from a background in the first world where she was an educated career woman. Because you see, one thing that first world women should never forget is that this is a macho society. And the fact is there are very, very few educated Latin American career women who are living and supporting themselves without the help of a husband or male partner. Fact is, when there's no husband around, they're almost always living with mommy and daddy, no matter their educational level or how old they are. In fact, I can't tell you how many educated Latin American career women I've personally met who are still living that way with mommy and daddy. I'm talking about female doctors and psychologists and female managers and university professors. Highly educated professionals still living with mommy and daddy. I'm talking about ladies in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, too. That is, of course, until they get married. And that all is reflective of the macho society here. When it comes to educated career women living alone down here in Latin America, it's rare, but when it happens, people, like friends and neighbors, seem to look at that with suspicion. Suspicion of what? I don't know. Then again, maybe I do, but it's not quite logical. Anyway, unless it's an old spinster without a family living alone, it's kind of a scarlet letter. I've been told by a number of sources that's one of the reasons there's always been that rumor going around, universally within the Latin male society, that is, that gringas are much more loose and easy than Latin girls. Why? Because Latin men down here have heard that all gringas, when they reach the age of about 20 or 21, want to get the hell out of their parents' life and get an apartment on their own. And that's exactly what they do. So in their puny minds, most Latin guys think when a girl rejects her family and moves into an apartment on her own, she's demonstrating to the world that she's a very liberated woman, in more ways than one. And make no mistake about it, Latin guys and gals think that when a gringa, a single gringa that is, moves into an apartment on her own, or with other like-minded single ladies, Latins see it as a rejection of traditional family values, if you know what I mean. Because you see, down here, in their own social setting, all respectable young Latin women live at home until they get married. Even young Latin women beyond 45. You see the twisted logic there? And by the way, that loose single gringa rumor is not something that us long-term expats really get. Because you see, that very same rumor has been going around for countless years, but in reverse among first-world gringos. The fact is, and I'm sure some of you ladies and guys up there can bear this out, the rumor is, up in the first world, is that Latin women are much more free and easy in the sex department than your average homegrown first-world girl up in Boston or Cleveland. Now, to prove that that particular rumor is well-entrenched, all you have to do is take one of those weekend jaunts down to Costa Rica or Cancun, then ask a few of the young American college kids hanging around your pool to give you two or three good reasons why they're down there in the first place. Well, they can't say it's cheap anymore, because it's not. It's first real expensive. And, you know, they could have stayed in Florida if they wanted hot and tropical. And in Hawaii and California, there's much better surfing. So why did they come down just to party or hit spring break? Well, it's like this. If you can get the truth out of them, you'll almost always hear them say, "It's those Latin girls. Rumor has it that they're easy." So that begs the question, is it based on rumor or actuality? Well, you know, I've been down here a long time, and I lived in Costa Rica 3 years, and I see how these things play out. It's true that Latin girls always seem to dress much sexier than their gringa counterparts, and they dance 1,000 times sexier, too. But does that make them easier? Well, certainly it does in the minds of weekend travel package, college-aged gringo partying males. But believe me, based on countless true reports, it's more about young gringo male ego fantasies than anything. But remember, you're asking that question on the gringo tourist trail, where the gringo dollar has contaminated pretty much of everything. Now, of course, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, chances are you just won't be able to find any college-aged young American partying boys around the pool. Though I guarantee you, if you hang around hotel pools off the gringo tourist trail, chances are you'll run into some young Mormons or straight-laced college kids on First World Church youth missions lounging at the hotel pool in between digging cisterns for Jesus. Now, if you ask any of those young college boys in the group what they're down here for, you'll hear a completely different story. And just a little aside here, by the way, you'll notice if you're down here a while, when do-gooder First World Church groups come down for the weekend to save the world, it's funny that when they're not doing the Lord's work, they're staying at the very finest 4- and 5-star hotels. You know, the Camino Reals, the Princesses, the Intercontinentals, Radissons, Malias, and Clarion Suites. You know the drill. They're really roughing it, you know? Heaven forbid they'd have to actually live, sleep, and eat shoulder to shoulder with those struggling, dirt-poor souls they're trying to save out in the boonies. So, what's that all about? And if you think that's BS or it's not happening, I'll give you the names of a couple of 4- and 5-star hotels, and you just sit in the lobby and check out all the matching good news t-shirts that walk by. Oh, and by the way, that's one way you'll know you're way off the gringo tourist trail. You just won't see any wise-ass spring break, college boy sunburned, beer-chugging partiers hanging around. That said, whoa, you try saying that. Anyway, that said, over the years I've met quite a few long-term expat gringas, first world ladies who've come down here, who've hooked up with or had romantic relationships, etc., with middle, even lower middle class Latin guys, and in the end, nearly all of them have suffered culture clash to some degree, often to a severe degree, so much so that the relationship eventually crashed and burned. Because, you know, no matter how nice or handsome those young but broke Antonio Banderas lookalikes might be, ladies, gringas, I'm here to tell you, you're in for trouble, whether it's a long-term or short-term hookup. Like I mentioned, if your romantic interest is from the middle or lower middle classes, it seems like that's always the road to trouble. Not that there won't be problems when the opposite occurs. That is, when a first-world guy or first-world expat hooks up with a middle-class or lower middle-class Latina. I've seen some really big-time crash and burn situations there, too. But, you know, there are ways to head that off at the pass, and certain clues and tip-offs that you should heed early on in a relationship that many a gringo and gringa are just too blind to see. So, at the risk of sounding like a jerk, what else is new, huh? Here are some more politically incorrect tips about that. Starting with this. If your new supposed Latina or Latino love of a lifetime shows any interest at all in visiting the United States or getting a green card, or worse, mentioning occasionally how nice it would be to live the permanent American dream up in Cleveland, that's when you should look for the door in a hurry. And also, Be on the lookout when his or her family members approach you as a possible gateway or helping hand in their quest to obtain that green card and the so-called non-existent American dream. If any of that happens, I'm telling you, run for the exits. So then you might ask, what if you really are head over heels and really believe you found your perfect mate? And she or he has passed all those little tests, and you know that person is truly not a gold digger and really doesn't care all that much about the green card thing. Thus, no pressure and no ulterior motives. And you know there literally are millions of nice, stable, intelligent, undemanding, perfectly happy and content Latins like that. And by the way, your best bet if you're looking for such a relationship is off the gringo tourist trail. But you knew that already, right? Although, I have to say that many a gringo and gringa are guilty of turning perfectly great Latins and Latinas into gringo wannabe materialistic mass consumption monsters. The fact is, I see it all the time. But back to the point, what happens if you do find a great love and romantic match, and his or her family is looking at you like a meal ticket or an easy path to a green card? So, how do you handle that one? Well, it's easy. Or I should say it sounds easy, but it was a hard-learned lesson by so many gringos, believe me. And here it is. After you've found your Latino or Latino soulmate, it's going to make all the difference in the world where you live in relation to his or her family members, like mom and dad and the brothers and the sisters. The old Latin homestead, you know? So the best tip of all is to move at least an hour's drive or chicken bus ride from the family homestead, preferably 2 hours. And of course, that'll be no problem for you, because as a foreign gringo or gringa, what do you care where you live? As long as it's a nice, safe, upscale neighborhood where you have access to all the amenities you want or need. And if your new Latina or Latino partner doesn't agree with that, they want to be closer to the family, that's when you should put your foot down or head for the door too. Because believe me, it's very true. When you marry a Latina or Latina, or you hook up in a permanent relationship that way, you really have married into his or her family. But as long as you're an hour or two away by bus, there should be practically no interference in your life from that family at all. No hangers-on, no itinerant brothers or cousins asking for gardening jobs, and no unannounced family member drop-ins on weekends to watch the game on your 52-inch flat-screen TV and raid your refrigerator and booze cabinet. And for the more picky among us gringos, if you live far away from the family homestead, there'll be no visiting little nieces and nephews with dirty shoes and sticky fingers, using your sofa as a trampoline, or fishing for loose change in the cushions of your lazy boy, and worse yet, putting soiled toilet paper not in the toilet, but in the garbage can. Y'all remember that Latin problem now, don't you? I'm sure you do, and you'll want to avoid it at all costs, believe me. So, bottom line, one of the keys to a successful Latina-Latino-Gringa-Gringa relationship, love match or whatever, is to set up housekeeping a long way physically from the homestead of the main members of your soulmate's family. In a way, it's like what they say up in the States. It's good to live far, far away from your in-laws, preferably on different continents. And you know, so many of us have learned that the hard way, that if you don't take note of it now, I hate to say, I told you so, but I'll say it right now, I told you so. Now, for those of you who are of the opinion that it's just as easy to fall for a rich guy or gal than a poor one, that too presents its own set of problems. And though in most cases that doesn't seem to be such a happy arrangement for the average gringo who comes down and ends up meeting and marrying a rich Latina, so why do those wealthy Latina common gringo marriages often crash and burn? Or just end up being miserable for the gringo? Why should that be? There's all the money in the world and probably a few helicopters thrown in too, and maybe even a family beach house and yacht in Miami. Well, most times that doesn't seem to work out because the first world gringo simply loses his identity. He gets absorbed into the family, the wealthy family that he married into. It's as if he's married into old royalty, and he and everyone else in the family are always under the thumb of the rich patriarch. That would be his father-in-law, and maybe even grandpa. Like, for example, one nice gringo guy I know who's in a situation like that, he told me it's like living in a bad Latin soap opera. In his case, like he said, he had the very unfortunate luck of falling in love and marrying a very rich girl from Colombia. No, I can respond. When he says to me he'll never kiss up to his father-in-law like everyone else does in the family, is, I told you so. So, for male gringos in that situation, getting absorbed into a rich family like that can be pretty self-defeating. However, it's a different story when a gringa, a first-world lady, comes down here and hooks up with a wealthier Latin male. But do prepare yourself. You'll have to fight that macho thing tooth and nail all your life. And, believe it or not, the hardest part of all will be trying to save your kids from the dominance of that family. And, of course, that inbred macho thing that goes along with it. Believe me, you'll want to be the one to take complete control of the upbringing of your kids. Do not leave it to his family. And don't let the maids, the cleaning ladies, and the nannies do it for you either. Now, that's a whole other show, and we'll get to that some other time, I think. Anyway, ladies, gringas, marrying a wealthy Latin guy is much preferable, I've been told, than if a first-world gringa comes down and hooks up with a middle-class or lower-middle-class Latin. Again, ladies, believe me, when you're down here in Latin America, you don't want to entangle yourself with a poor guy. Now, remember what I've said so many times before. A middle-class or lower-middle-class Latin guy is only making about 300 to maybe 600 or 700 bucks a month, way below the poverty line up in the States. So unless you feel like supporting him and his extended family, I suggest you be very careful about who you hook up with romantically. And I know that's not anything that we all have too much control over, but also remember that being a gringa when you come down here, you're automatically queen of the mountain, and every Latin guy wants to hook up with you, including all the wealthy ones too. So just add 2 points to your 10-point score, and that's how all the Latins will view you down here. On second thought, I don't know what business I have giving anybody romantic advice, but I'm only really saying this because I've seen the trouble a lot of gringos and gringas have gotten themselves into by not being particularly cautious about who they choose to hang with, romantically or otherwise. And here's another thing concerning gringo ladies, on a topic I wasn't quite able to finish 2 shows ago. I do have emails from ladies asking me about driving motorcycles here. So anyway, all you gringos out there who are thinking about coming down and buying a motorcycle, if you do, you'll certainly get a ton of attention, and that's not exactly what you want when you come down here to Latin America. You'll have more attention than you can handle by just being a gringa. Now, I must say, I do know a couple of gringo ladies who drive scooters. And I don't recommend you drive a cycle or a scooter in any medium to large-sized city. But if you're in a small town, let's say under 20,000 people, it could be absolutely the way to go. In that case, as long as you stay in town and don't take it out on the highway, I highly recommend it. So why is that? Why are small towns okay for you to drive a scooter? Because under those conditions, there's less traffic, it's more spread out. Drivers in general are more courteous and more laid back. Now, personally, I had never drive a cycle down here myself. And because I've actually hit 2 motorcyclists down here, with my car, of course, not my fists, though I've been tempted. Now, if you live down here and drive, in time, you'll be thinking about fists or baseball bats yourself. Anyway, since I personally nailed 2 motorcycles on the road, that reinforces my feelings about driving or riding on one. And sooner or later, I'll get around to telling those 2 stories. Enough said about that. Now, let's change gears for a minute. I assume all of you know by now that Argentina has once again defaulted. And of course, you might recall, if you've been listening to this program for some time, I predicted that way back about 1.5 years ago. And of course, that wasn't such a big feat for me because Argentina defaults about every 10 years like clockwork. That said, I think Doug Casey and his followers who are sitting out there in that little colony in the Argentine boonies are probably not feeling so optimistic about settling there right about now. Because, you know, no matter what he says about it, when a country defaults, it's a recipe for instability and chaos. And, you know, I like Doug Casey, but let's see what kind of spin he puts on that. That said, here's something you didn't know. I'm going to paraphrase an article that a loyal Expat Files follower sent me just a few days ago. It says here that out of the approximately 200 countries in the world, Moody's Investors Service, along with other investment services, are reporting on 10 of those countries out of that 200 that have the very worst credit ratings in the world. The countries next in line to default like Argentina or end up insolvent. These countries are rated C small AA1 or worse. Now, I'm sure you all know that the best ratings start at AAA+. Here we're talking about countries with C ratings or less. Now, it says here, ratings with a CAA1 or worse are a considerable credit risk due to a combination of factors like negative GDP growth, high double-digit inflation and unemployment, and extreme debt levels. Now, of course, Argentina tops the list, but here are the other 9. And yes, most are the usual suspects, but there are a few surprises, so pay attention. I'll give them to you in no particular order, since all of them are rated pretty much like a sloppy, wet camel turd, to be avoided by investors at all costs. Number 1, Ukraine. Number 2, Greece. Number 3, Jamaica. 4, Pakistan. Number 5, Cuba. 6, Egypt. 7, Venezuela. Surprise, surprise. Number 8, Belize. You heard me, Belize. Now, for all you gonna-bes and wannabes out there who've been listening to this program for quite some time, you know I already told you that Belize has a very precarious banking system. And they were so near to default about 2 years ago that England, because they're a former colony of England, came in and bailed them out. That didn't get much press at all, but I did mention it on the show. That was 2 years ago, and now they're on the brink of insolvency once again. Now, even though they have perhaps the best bank secrecy laws in the world and the world's most airtight trust programs, if you recall, I do not recommend investing in Belize, putting money in a Belize bank, or having any kind of substantial investments there. So for you longtime listeners, that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise to you. But for all you other guys and gals out there who've heard all this internet traffic and real estate promotion crap going on in Belize, you're on your own if you don't want to listen to this kind of a red flag. Which brings us to the last country that has the credit rating of a wet, smelly camel turd. And no, for all you animal lovers out there, I'm not particularly picking on camels here. It could be any old disgusting turd. A Hillary turd, a Bush turd, an Obama turd, you name it. Okay. And the winner is Ecuador. Let's see now. In South America, the water spins clockwise, right? Okay, hate to disappoint all you international living subscribers out there. Yep, Ecuador. And that's what our next show is going to be about.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.